Today's program is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit RT11.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, and welcome to Ask a Clean Person, the podcast on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jolie Kerr, a cleaning expert, advice columnist, and author of the New York Times bestselling book, My Boyfriend Barfed in My Handbag, and Other Things You Can't Ask Martha. My weekly column, Ask a Clean Person, appears on Deadspin.com, and my guest today is Daniel Gritzer. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I'm excited to have you here.
Me too.
We are going to get gross today. Before we get gross, let me tell you our listeners who you are and what you do. Daniel is the culinary director at Serious Eats, where he writes about food, cooking, and recipes with an eye to obsessive recipe testing and myth busting. And I know about the obsessive part because I read your fresh tomato sauce post from last summer, and I'm pretty obsessive. Daniel, it scared me.
Sometimes I look at it and I'm like, I don't even know if I'm going to do that much work the next time I make fresh tomato sauce.
It was insane. Like, I'm in a CSA this summer, a farm share for like people who don't know. And I'm actually blogging my way through. Every week I blog what I got, what I didn't use, what I made. It's keeping me honest with the CSA. And I found your thing because I was Googling. Like, I was like, okay, when the tomatoes start coming. They started coming last week.
Mm-hmm.
Only two of them, but like the onslaught is on its way. This isn't my first rodeo with the CSA. So I guess Serious Eats must have like retweeted out the article from last summer. And I was like, oh, I'm going to read this. And I saw it was you. And I was like, oh my God, it's Daniel. And because I was like, oh great, this summer I will master the fresh tomato sauce. And then I started reading it and I was like, no, that's not going to be my summer. I'm going to stick with steak pizzaiole and salad.
You know what? Part of it is we sometimes will go to those extremes just to show some of the considerations. But I think readers can take pieces of that and apply it. Maybe, you know, if you really want to do the whole thing, that's amazing, and hopefully it delivers on its promise. But even if you don't do the whole thing, at least there's insight there that you can sort of work with.
So thank you for that.
That's how I like to think of it.
I actually feel a lot better now. I'm not going to do it all, but I'm going to try some of it.
You're off the hook. It's okay.
Thank you. Okay, so let me finish telling people more about you. You are fascinating. First of all, you are like one of the only people I've met who has had more jobs than I have.
I've had a very circuitous route to where I am today.
I have too. Someday I should have you come back and we should just talk about like how we ended up doing what we do.
Because
I have a weird story too. So here are some of the other things that Daniel has done. Prior to joining Serious Eats, he was an editor at Food and Wine. He was a staff writer for Time Out New York. And before all of that, he was a professional restaurant cook who also worked on farms in France, Italy, and Spain because he is living the life. This brings us to the sort of center, the heart of what we're going to talk about today. Daniel is also Department of Health certified, and he has some things to say to us about food safety and which rules you need to follow and which ones you don't, which I love. And he is going to, I hope, tell us some gross out stories. And in order to facilitate, because I want to hear gross out stories, I love gross things, which people don't expect about me because I'm the clean person. But like, I like gross things because it gives me something to clean up.
Yeah, it's inspiration, right?
Yeah.
You want to be driven by sheer revulsion to
go fix
something.
Which is one of the reasons I like doing what I do for Deadspin. Because the men, I mean, listen, the women send me gross out stories for sure. But like the men really like go, they do like a deep dive on the gross out story. And I love it. I love hearing about their poop and their, I mean, poop all everywhere.
Hopefully no poop in the kitchen.
Hopefully no. Well, we got some questions about that. So in advance of having you come on, instead of doing sort of my usual, like, pulling reader questions that I've gotten and haven't answered in the column, I did something a little different this week. I solicited on Twitter and from my Deadspin colleagues questions that they had about, like, relative filth in restaurants, because I thought that that would lead to some kind of good gross stuff from you. So I'm actually going to just dive right into those, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, cool. Actually, you know what? Before we do, I have one quick question about, like, the certification. Did you get the certification because you were working in a restaurant and you had to?
Exactly. Yeah. Not everyone who works in a restaurant or cooks in a restaurant has to carry this certification, but the rule is that someone on premise at any given moment needs to have that.
It's like knowing CPR.
Yeah, somebody
needs, you need one person.
You need that one person.
Okay, got it. Okay, so that's cool. So you weren't, like, doing restaurant inspections.
No, I was.
But I want to find out who that person is, and I want to have them come on the podcast.
You should put them on with a chef and have them just battle it out, because they do not see eye to eye a lot of the time.
Oh, I love it. Maybe you should have a podcast and you should do that. all right. So let's go right into to some of the questions. So the one of the first ones I got was, how little do I really want to think about cockroaches in kitchens?
If the thought bothers you, you want to think about it as little as possible. I'll be honest, in New York City, there's a high probability that there are cockroaches in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Either there have been, there currently are, there will be. It's an ongoing battle to keep them at bay. I mean, it's definitely true in a city like New York. It's probably true most places. I've only worked in restaurants in New York, so I can really only speak to that. But if you're in a place where cockroaches can be a problem, you can bet that any place that is a hub of food and cooking activity is going to be a place that they will find. I mean, they will get anywhere.
They're cockroaches. They have a reputation for being hale and hearty.
You can't just shut them. You can't hermetically seal the kitchen and keep them out. They're coming in.
Right. Exactly.
And so then it's a question of what you do about it.
Right. What do restaurants generally do? Just, like, full on, like, the most poison you can find?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of just cleaning up every day and throughout the day, and just, you certainly don't want to make it, and this is true at home too, this is a big thing that I think about. I don't want to put out a buffet of crumbs and because cockroaches are tiny. A little crumb is like a steak, right? Like, that's just such a big meal for them.
Oh, that's such a good way of, I've never really thought about it that way.
So when people have, like, little bits of, like, crumbs and things on their counters, that just gives me the willies, because I'm like, that is, you have just put out the cockroach spread. Like, they're going to come and feast on this. Even if it looks like it's inconsequential to us.
Yeah. It's like a hot appetizer buffet for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
it's all the good stuff. It's the pigs and blankets and sliders.
You got the crudité.
Delicious.
You got the toasts.
Now I want the bruschetta. Blankets.
That's the first thing.
Then same thing with vermin, right? Just
absolutely.
Like, it's just going to happen, right? So everyone should just deal with it. First, it hasn't killed you yet.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I don't, you know, if you, some kitchens have conditions that are so bad that it would bug me out a bit more, because they're probably not dealing with it.
Okay.
But even the cleanest places, they're going to show up sometimes. So here's the first gross out story.
Oh, yay.
I worked in an Italian restaurant in Gramercy area in New York City.
Okay.
And I worked the pasta station. And so when you're in a restaurant that's doing a lot of pasta, you have this thing which is like a pasta boiler. It's a huge, looks like a deep fryer, basically, like an industrial or commercial, I guess I should say, deep fryer, except that it's filled with water. Instead of oil. And you've got these huge, huge, huge gas jets underneath that just, like, they can get that so much water boiling so fast and keep it boiling.
I want that at home.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the most amazing thing. The problem is, it's also, like, the most lovely place for roaches to go hang out underneath, like, in the sort of inner workings where the gas jets are.
Oh.
Because it's incredibly humid because of all the water that's boiling in that vicinity. And it's hot. And this is, like, roaches love this. Love it. And so it was constant that I would come into this restaurant, which was a clean restaurant. And we actually totally aced all our Department of Health inspections, never had any big issues. But it was just a fact. Like, I would open this thing up to turn it on in the morning, and the roaches would just, like...
They would just go skittering.
Oh, by the hundreds of...
I can see... You can't see it, but I can see our engineer, Liz, is, like, just got her face in her hands right now. You're killing us.
The exterminator would come every week and do his thing, and then they would go away for a while. Although, of course, you know, when the exterminator comes, then you come in the next day and they're all dead.
Right, then you have the corpses.
Then you have the corpses. And sometimes they would die in the boiler. And I have to say, the customers who ate there when I was working there were lucky, because this repulsed me so, like, this was not okay with me. And I would clean every day this boiler.
So you, like, took it upon yourself to go the extra mile because it bothered you.
Yeah, it had to be clean enough that it no longer bothered me to eat any food that was coming out of this thing.
Okay.
Every day.
All right.
But you don't always have the guarantee that everyone cares.
Everyone should just only go to restaurants where Daniel works is the answer.
Yeah, you need someone who's incredibly anal.
Yeah. Okay, so actually this leads into another good one. We're going to get to all of these, I think. I hope. Which was, someone asked, what red flag / warning sign should I look out for as a customer? Are there patterns that usually mean trouble? And then this is kind of a similar one. Someone else asked, is it true that if a restaurant can't keep its bathroom clean, that its kitchen probably is also gross? And then added, I think we've already answered this question. She then added, do I actually want to know about how clean restaurants are? Is ignorance bliss? I think, yes, ignorance is
a little bit bliss. I mean, you're letting someone else prepare your food, and to some degree, like, you have to kind of just suspend your issues.
Right.
But, you know, that said, there are things. I mean, I will go into restaurants and walk past the kitchen and try to steal a peek. And, oftentimes I'll see things where I just think, oh man, that is not a clean kitchen. And then I'll still eat there.
Even though it's not going to kill you. What are some of the things that you notice? Like, is the bathroom a good indication?
I think overall cleanliness, including the bathroom, is a good indication. Now, technically, you have different people respond. The people who are cleaning a bathroom in the kitchen are not the same people who are preparing the food.
Right,
which is,
and they're not the people who are cleaning the kitchen, right?
A good thing. Yeah, I mean, in the kitchen...
For the most part, because the people cooking are probably doing the maintenance in the kitchen, like...
The dishwashers and the porters and whatever will all be doing the cleanup in the kitchen. Maybe sometimes there's some overlap, like the porter-type roles could also be cleaning the bathroom. But still, I think it's a fair... I mean, if the bathroom's disgusting, it's an indication that overall there's not a great deal of concern about cleanliness in the entire establishment.
Okay. All right. Bathroom leads us right into the other one. I was hoping someone was going to ask this, and if they didn't, I was just going to go ahead and ask it, but I didn't have to because one of my colleagues at Deadspin asked, how often do employees actually wash their hands after going to the bathroom?
These are one of the great mysteries in life.
I mean,
you'd have to be in there with them.
Here's my attitude on it. Those signs are up for a reason, right? Okay, here's the thing that people always, like, groan when I say this, but I love this. You don't make laws about sheep fucking unless sheep fucking is a problem in your community.
That's right.
I know it's a very crude way to put it, but it tends to stick with people when I put it that way. You wouldn't be putting the signs up telling employees that they have to wash their hands
if it wasn't
a problem that employees are not washing their hands after using the bathroom.
Yeah.
What's your gut instinct? Yeah, of course, you have to be in there. I mean, although I guess, like, if it's a bigger bathroom, like, you'd see your coworkers.
True, if it's communal.
If it's communal, you see your coworkers. And hopefully sort of, like, the communal shame factor is enough that they're doing so. But what's, like, your gut instinct? Do you think people who work in restaurants are actually really diligent about it? Do you think that they're really not? Do you think that it's a kind of, like, fuck you to the man to not wash your hand, to be like, yeah, I'm going to screw that customer?
No, I don't think that's common. But I wouldn't be surprised if some people are just sort of negligent about it.
Okay.
This is one of those things where I just want to think.
Okay.
I just want to believe that everyone washes their hands really well.
I want to believe
not
that, too.
Everyone probably does.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you'd have to install a camera and monitor.
Yeah, which would be illegal.
And probably highly alarming when you see how many people don't.
Yeah, huge invasion of privacy. So yeah, and also yeah, I don't think I want to know. I don't think I want to know.
Yeah, I mean beyond the signs, what more can you do? You know, beyond passing the law that says don't screw your sheep. What more can you do?
Thank you for adopting that. I really appreciate it. Listen, this is actually, on that distressing note, a good time for us to take a little break and recover ourselves from the terrifying thought that people are not really washing their hands after using the bathroom. So just a minute, Daniel and I will be back, and we will take on a few more of these queries from my Twitter followers and my colleagues at Deadspin about how gross restaurants actually are. I'm Joel Acare. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Harold McGee. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a nonprofit organization, which means they depend on the support of listeners like you and like me. The best way you can support this program and others like it is to visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org, as I have, and click the donate button to become a member today, as I have. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
The following program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com.
Welcome back to Ask a Clean Person, the podcast. I'm Jolie Kerr. My guest today is Daniel Gritzer of Serious Eats. We have been talking about kitchen messes, restaurant kitchen messes, and horror stories. And we've already gotten pretty gross. I think we're going to get grosser.
Yeah.
I'm going to try.
Let's talk about eating cockroaches now.
Oh, no. I can't get on board. I'm a pretty adventurous eater. And I'm not super freaked out by bugs, but the idea of eating a crunchy bug shell,
not roaches, but
like crickets.
Yeah, they're good.
They're good?
Yeah, they're straight up good.
I found one in my arugula about a month or two ago.
It's organic.
I should have saved it and eaten it.
Whenever you get a bug in your salad, just say, you know, it's organic. There we go. There's life here.
You know what? I was cool about it. I just picked it out, threw it in the trash can. It was dead. Picked it out, threw it in the trash can, washed the arugula.
There you go.
And made a salad. I did not tell my husband.
If it's
surprise!
If it's good enough for the grasshopper, it's good enough for you, right?
I fed you grasshopper arugula when I had dinner and never let on. Actually, you know, that's a thing. That was like, you know, a like clamshell arugula thing from the Key Food. That was the grocery store. Mm. Which, you know, like that happens. That's why you wash your arugula, people. But in the CSA, you know, you expect it in the CSA because it's organic. We have our farm is an organic farm, as I think almost all of them are. I think that's like a requirement of CSAing. You have to be as hippy dippy as possible, which I embrace because I went to school in Cambridge starting at age 6. So I've got that like Cambridge liberal Birkenstock wearing thing about me. Even though I don't wear Birkenstocks. So I like totally embrace all the hippie part of the CSA and I love it. And I, you know, even eat the kohlrabi. And the one thing that, and you know, obviously very diligent about cleaning my CSA vegetables, but like there's always one bundle of something, usually greens, each summer that has a slug. And I mind the slug. The slug is like the one thing that I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, because the slug's slimy.
It's really gross.
But just like you wash the, but why? I mean, the greens.
Yeah, I know you wash it, but like you still have to. You always end up touching the slug.
Yeah, right. You have to touch it to get rid of it.
You could use a paper towel. I mean, which I usually do, but I usually find the slug because I'm in there washing the greens and my hand is like, ah! You know.
See, that stuff doesn't...
Does it bother you?
No, when I was working on farms...
Oh, because you worked on a farm.
Yeah, I remember in particular the eggplant. This was in Italy, and there were these particular bugs that just... And it was an organic farm, so we weren't using pesticides to stay on top of this. And there was this one bug that just was all over the eggplant all the time. And I just got to the point where I was just, like, popping them between my... Oh. I would just walk around, just like...
like bubble wrap?
Yeah, like popping them and ripping the beetle heads off.
Oh, just Daniel. Like, That's like the kind of behavior in children that indicates like sociopathy.
Yeah, like, I've thought about that sometimes.
That explains a lot about your fresh tomato sauce. Now it's the work of a sociopath. All right, let's do some more. That was gross. Thanks for that. I appreciate it. Let's move into another. This is gross, and it's gross because it's so very specific.
Oh, I'm excited.
I'm going to tell you who asked this question. It was this morning. Albert Bernecco, who is one of my colleagues at Deadspin, who oversees Foodspin, mm-hmm. which is wonderful. I love food. And I write for Foodspin from time to time, not as much as I would like. I got to go heckle Albert and be like, why the hell am I not writing for Foodspin now? Because I actually started out before I was doing the cleaning stuff, writing food and drink stuff.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was how I started doing that for The All.
No kidding.
So that was sort of my beginning of all of this. So in any event, so Albert, who spends a lot of time thinking about food, because mm-hmm. he writes about it, mm-hmm. among other things, asked, how old is the soup?
How old is the soup?
Yeah.
Like in the
Isn't that a good one?
In the restaurants.
Yeah.
Hopefully not so old that it's rotten.
Right. But, like, isn't that... I've never thought about that. You probably have thought about that. Those, like, huge vats of soup? A week old? 2 weeks old?
No. No, actually, it's funny. It's
How many people order the soup?
Everybody orders the soup.
Really?
Well, okay, not everybody. But soup is popular, especially in Well, you know, summer, maybe it's a cold soup. In winter, it's a hot soup, and it's soothing, and it's, you know, people want, like, a light appetizer before they...
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I believe you.
But it's even...
You're the expert.
You know, a restaurant always has to try to make just enough food that it can sell that food before the food is destined for the garbage.
Right.
We all can very easily detect when things are rotten. Most of us can. So you really can't pass spoiled soup off on your customers. I mean, you wouldn't want to. You wouldn't get away with it. So the concern with, like, food safety is very rarely one of spoilage, because we can detect spoilage so well.
Okay.
The concern...
What is the concern?
The concern is more, like, bacterial.
Like listeria.
Salmonella. Exactly. Yeah. Botulism. The things that you can't smell... But that will...
What's the one? Oh, trichinosis. I'm constantly screaming about trichinosis.
That's kind of like a non-issue these days.
I know. It's like an old thing. I think I picked it up from The Sopranos, actually. Right. Like, that was like a thing that, like, Livia Soprano would screech about, was, you're going to get trichinosis.
You're get
and somehow, like, my Italian side just, like, absorbed that. And I just am constantly on about trichinosis.
It's going to get you the trichinosis. You know, you got to watch out for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pork. We eat a lot of pork in my house, oddly.
Trichinosis and pork is pretty... I think it's exceedingly rare.
Okay. I'm still probably going to just because it's funny to me. I don't know. I mean, it's also a little fun to say.
It is a good one.
Yeah.
Botulism
is a good one.
Botulism freaks me out. You know, that's like...
Are you a canner?
On occasion.
Okay.
Not religiously, but yeah. Okay. And that is. It's anaerobic. If it's a low oxygen condition, like a vacuum sealed thing, and there's something that was done wrong in the processing, or, you know, yeah, then you could... There's some risk. And botulism can, like, kill you, so...
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know.
That one's no joke. So that's where the food's... And you can't smell, but if you open a product that's tainted with botulism, you can't smell
You wouldn't
that.
Know. Yeah, there's no
you
way of knowing.
Know.
You'll just die.
You'll just die. Like, if they haven't handled it correctly, it's going to really mess you up, and you'll never know. So that's... How old is the soup is less of an issue, because it's like...
And also, like, even if it's old, it's soup, you're going to boil it.
Yeah, you're going to boil it. I mean, and, you know, if it's for some reason, if it's really old, but then they would keep it frozen. Like, you'd have to do basic things to to stave off spoilage.
Right.
But you're going to know if somebody serves you rotten soup.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to be on the lookout for rotten soup. Okay. Another similar one. Someone asks, what's the day you never order fish again?
So this
They're
one,
like, I forget.
Yeah,
and actually, it was funny
because
this morning
true.
I was saying, I was like, God, you know, that's one I always forget. I was like, I think it's Monday.
It's, yeah, I'll try. I think Anthony Bourdain, this comes from Kitchen Confidential.
Yes, it does.
And I'm pretty sure he did say Monday.
Yeah, and I think the reasoning for it was that most deliveries happen on Monday afternoon or Tuesday morning, and that means that on Monday, if you're ordering the fish, you're eating the fish that's been there through the whole weekend.
Yeah, and it's there's.
But I feel like that's like too broad a statement to make. Who knows when restaurants are getting their delivery? Not every restaurant is on the same
right, and you can
schedule right. They can't be. It's.
I mean, it is true that very few to no deliveries happen on a Sunday.
Well, yeah.
But in a place like New York, their delivery is happening even on a Saturday.
Right.
So if the restaurant's buying good fresh fish and holding it correctly, that fish should be fine on Monday. And if it's not, they shouldn't be cooking it and serving it to you anyway. Like
right. Yeah, but you know they are. Come on.
Sometimes you do. Yeah, you get a piece or you know mussels are a good one that don't hold up. Very well as they sit around. So it can happen. But here's the thing. It could just as easily happen on a Friday, but even if you have a delivery coming. Because what if the last fish delivery was on Monday
and then
over-ordered and come Friday, they're still trying to sell that fish.
Right.
So it doesn't mean all that much. I wouldn't worry about it. Just smell your fish when it's served to you. And if you think that it's off or that it's
say
funky
something.
Just say something, but you it's just as likely I think practically to happen on a Wednesday as a Monday.
Okay.
As a, yeah,
okay. So this is I think this was another Bourdain thing. The same person who asked about the fish mentioned he said Bourdain already noted to never eat brunch. And I actually don't know if I recall what I assume that rule is just because like it's all the old stuff and they're slopping old stuff into brunch specials. So, but which is then related to my question, sort of in follow up to the fish thing. Bourdain also said, I think, never order the special.
Also, not.
Do you believe
true.
That or no?
It's like there's a grain of truth. It, just in the same way as don't order on the Monday, there's like a rationale that underlies it that can be true sometimes, but it's simply not true as any kind of rule of thumb. And a lot of times in a good restaurant, the special really is something special that the restaurant got in and is excited about selling. Like maybe some beautiful bay scallops that have come in and there's a limited number. And so they just run it as a special. Is it possible that sometimes there's something they're trying to get rid of? Yes. But in a good place, I just feel like no one's trying to pull the wool over your eyes in that way.
Okay.
And again, it goes back to spoilage is easy to detect. So if they're just trying to sell you the nasty old stuff, like you're going to know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's helpful. So just don't worry, guys. Don't listen to Bourdain is the takeaway. Let's say that.
Yeah. There were a lot of little things that came out of that book that people latched onto that really don't fully hold up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also it, that book came out a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It was a different era.
Yeah.
Different time.
So, you know, there we go. Yeah. Also, it was before social media. It was before people were, you know, on Yelp and on Twitter and on Instagram taking photos of rotten food. I mean, come on.
That's yeah. Like, before letter grades in the New York City.
Oh, God, the letter grades. Yeah. Cripes. I remember a time where there were no grades and you could smoke in restaurants. It was great. Fish was all old.
And, yeah. No good one old was the wiser.
Good old gritty New York. All right. So here is actually this one came up a bunch. So we can, since you have like now ungrossed us about the fish, I want you to.
Yeah. Let me gross you out again.
Gross us out. So I'm going to read to like three iterations on the same question. Mm. Friend of mine, good friend of mine asked, and I was like, can you clarify this a little bit? This is a little vague. She couldn't. She wanted to know, what's the grossest thing that's still technically A-okay? Another person chimed in and said, same question, but in regards to food or kitchen cleanliness. Oh, because I was like, can you clarify that a little bit? And I was like, what do you mean? Like, do you mean like a little bit of poop on the floor is okay, but not a lot of poop? And then someone was like, same question, but in regards to kitchen cleanliness. And then I got another, I think it's basically the same thing. It was just a little bit more specific. What is the grossest restaurant habit that's just fine? That's what I'd like to know. Like if keeping the oil in the fryer for 8 months is fine, et cetera. So those kinds of things. Yeah.
Oil in the fryer for 8 months is definitely not fine.
Okay.
Just for the record.
Okay. It would taste really...
It would get rancid. It gets rancid.
And it would start tasting like everything you fried in it.
Yeah, at a certain point, after several days, it'll start to take on some pretty nasty flavors. And also it's degrading, so you're starting to get lower and lower smoke points and... Yeah, but actually, I think my answer to all those questions is kind of that there's two sides of the same coin, which, and for me, it's gloves, latex gloves. So I actually think that in many instances, the wearing of latex gloves is the A-OK thing that's actually often really gross. And on the flip side, handling foods with your bare hands, which can seem gross, is in my mind, now the Department of Health wouldn't agree with me here, frequently A-OK. Now, it depends entirely on the person's practices.
Well, if they're washing their hands after the bathroom.
Yeah, washing their hands, and even washing their hands in between, you know, frequently in the kitchen, religiously washing your hands, basically. Right. What is gross about gloves? The thing that's potentially gross, and I'm not 100% against wearing gloves. There are scenarios when they make sense to wear them. But what ends up happening is that people don't do it right. So the Department of Health says if you handle any food that then goes straight to the customer without additional heat being added, you need to wear gloves. So that can mean handling an uncooked salad, but it can also be handling a steak after it's come out of the oven and before it goes on the plate. The problem is that in a lot of places, and so people know in restaurants, like, oh, if the DOH comes in and inspects us and I'm not wearing gloves and they see me touch the salad, it's a violation. What ends up happening is that people will, you can have just the same number of bad habits with gloves on that you can have with gloves off. So I can touch the raw chicken with my gloves on, and then I can touch the salad with my gloves on. Like, it changes nothing in terms of actual behavior.
You're still getting chicken... Blech.
On the salad.
Right.
If that person isn't being really diligent and taking the gloves off and putting new gloves on, which is also really wasteful, right? It's a lot of gloves going through. If you're going to do the gloves right from a cleanliness
standpoint,
you should
be going through tons of them in a day.
Tons of them.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you'll see it like the cashier or something in like a sort of counter service place that the person is handling the money with the gloves on.
With the glove on, yeah.
And then going and doing the food. This is not clean. There's nothing clean about this. Yeah. The DOH won't find them because the DOH comes in and is like, oh, they're wearing gloves. Check. You know, they're doing the right thing. Whereas, let's take another example, like a sushi chef who really, like, and I think the DOH is, they've had conflict in the past about this, but they've let up on it. Sushi chefs really don't want to wear gloves when they're handling the fish because it messes with your tactile sense.
Right.
If their hands are clean, I would much rather them wash their hands.
Right, a clean hand.
A clean hand than a dirty gloved hand. And so that's one of these ones where, like, they make this overarching rule that you kind of understand the rationale for it from a policy sense, but in practice, it means nothing, and it doesn't give me much comfort a lot of the time with the gloves because they're... And plus, you know, think of if you have a latex glove on, and you accidentally touch something that's dirty. Do you even notice?
Right.
Because you can't feel it.
Because you can't feel it.
That your hand is dirty. Yeah. So it's like, in some ways, it dulls your awareness to whether you've got something you need to wash off your hands in the first place.
Ugh, now I'm sorry I asked.
Yeah, so that's a that's a big one for me.
Any others, like the fryers or, like... Because I think what people were curious about was, like, the sort of, like, what would a normal person be like, oh, that's so wrong, but that actually is like, completely fine. Or not completely fine, but, like, not actually a concern.
Well, another is food temperatures.
Okay.
Cook it, like, how hot should you cook your chicken?
Right.
And this is another one where the health agencies give very extreme rules, like cook your chicken to at least 165 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right, at which point you have, like,
cardboard.
A piece of carpet.
If it's white meat, it's disgusting. Like, it's inedible. Nobody wants that. And so there can be a misconception of, oh, well, if it's cooked less than that, it's dangerous. So it's not true. It's more complicated than that. You can have a safe piece of chicken that's cooked to 150, for example, which will be much juicier. The only thing is it needs to be at that temperature a little bit longer than at 165.
Okay.
Because
that makes sense.
The killing of the microorganisms, which is the objective here, is not just a function of temperature. It's also a function of time. So
of time.
At 165, it's like total instantaneous annihilation of microorganisms, which is why they said
an annihilation of the piece of chicken that has now dried out.
Exactly.
No one at wants to eat.
At 150, it just needs to be at 150 for 3 minutes. And then it's as safe as the 165 degree Fahrenheit piece of chicken.
Right.
So that's one. That's another one where I feel like there's...
Okay.
There's a little bit of maybe a misconception a lot about how that works and what's safe and what's okay versus
okay.
what you
that,
hear is safe.
I feel like okay. I feel like the home cooks are going to be very interested in that little last point.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That,
you
like,
can you
yeah.
can cook the white meat less. Just make sure it spends a
just
little
cook
bit
it for a little longer,
more time right. at that
at the temperature.
I mean, 3 minutes is not that long at
no.
150. You could do it's like you could do it with your eyes closed.
Yeah. This is making me feel a lot better about my chicken cooking habits. I also cook a lot of chicken. Chicken and pork are big.
Do you temp it? Do you put a thermometer to check it?
No.
Does
listen,
it...
I work full time. I'm a full time housewife. I put dinner on the table every night. Get out of town.
And if there's a little salmonella on the table.
I'm blogging my CSA every week. Like, come on.
Come yeah, on. What's
come
a little salmonella?
Yeah.
No, actually, I don't mean to. I think a lot of times we get too worried about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. No. I mean, I know I'm cooking the chicken all the way through, right?
Yeah.
Cut it open. It's white. I know it's cooked.
Yeah. That's yeah. that. Yeah. That's
like kind of my rule of thumb. Yeah. All right. So let me see. Let me pull up a few more. Oh, here's a good one. How clean is my cutlery actually?
Your cutlery, are you washing it?
Meaning like restaurant cutlery.
Did I
not my own. Like,
are
no,
you
no,
using
no.
it in place of toilet paper?
No, they mean like the restaurant cutlery. Like restaurant, you know, like when you get a glass at a restaurant that has a lipstick mark on it and you're I see that you washed that, but it's obviously not actually clean.
I was thinking literally of kitchen knives, like the, you know, that you cook with.
Oh, yeah. No, those are probably pretty dirty.
I see. So like as a customer sitting at the table,
yeah.
In almost all instances, that stuff is going through really high temperature dishwashers,
yeah.
commercial dishwashers. Sometimes if the restaurant employees are not paying attention, like sometimes a little bit of food or like lipstick, certain things, even in those high
temperatures. Yeah, don't come off. I mean, the lipstick
come
doesn't
off.
Come off because it's waxy.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting. Like you're sitting there and you have the lipstick on your glass.
Yeah,
and
it's gross.
Understandably, you don't want to drink from it. You ask for a new glass. Is it dangerous? I mean, assuming it's been washed, which I think is a pretty safe assumption.
Yeah.
It's not dangerous. No, like it's been basically
right.
sanitized. Or,
yeah. Yeah. It's like what I say to people about the difference between stained and dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Like a shirt can have a stain on it, but still be clean
because mm-hmm.
you could have put it through the wash and the stain didn't come out. It doesn't mean it's not clean.
Right.
Because the matter came out, just it left a stain.
Right. And even, I mean, sometimes yeah. even like a little tiny crusted on bit of food somehow doesn't.
Yeah, it just won't come out.
It won't come off. It dries on. It's gross. You ask for a new fork, but
yeah.
like it's not.
And generally it's starchy stuff
yeah.
because starch will just dry up and stick like rice
yeah.
is like a good one. And those tiny, tiny little grains get
yeah.
in between the tiny of a fork. I see that
is
all
it?
The time.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
see that. I mean, I don't even have the benefit. It's so sad. I don't have the benefit of a dishwasher at home. And like, you know, we hand wash our dishes. We're good about it.
Mm-hmm.
I, as you might imagine, I'm a pretty darn tootin' good dishwasher.
I believe it.
But yeah, well, you know, I'll be like unloading the drying rack and be like, oh, there's some rice still stuck in that fork. Well,
yeah.
Just give it another.
Just go back
another
at
whirl.
It.
So yeah. All right. Let me see if I can do one more. We've got a little bit. We've got like two more minutes. Let's
mm-hmm.
see if I have one more that I can knock out of the park for you. Going through my list. Oh, this is a really good one to end on because it's a little positive.
Okay.
What's the easiest thing to fix in regards to sanitary practices, but most often overlooked or ignored?
You know, the thing that most people are going to say is that common advice of clean as you go. But I won't do that one because I feel
okay.
like you always hear that one. I think, I mean, this is highly personal. You know, aside from like sort of really basic things like don't serve raw chicken or you know, stuff that's, and, you know, avoid cross-contamination, which is something you just have to be, I would say probably, a couple things. One is try to develop your eagle eye, meaning.
Right. You said you have a real eagle eye for cleanliness.
Yeah.
Like you can spot a hair from like a mile away. Yeah.
Which comes from my restaurant days. Like I don't know what it is. There's just, your brain learns to see things and identify, you know, objects.
This is weird. Have you ever gone to an eye doctor and had a test for keenness done on yourself? Because I bet you have what's called a highly observant eye. I have one too.
Can they test this?
Yes.
There's a keenness test?
Yes.
I would ace that test.
We are going to talk about this after the show. I have had this test done in the course of trying to determine there was a little something going wrong with my vision, and they did this test as part of the overall testing they were doing. And it turns out that I have, this is a technical term, I have a highly observant eye. And when I learned that, I was probably in my maybe mid to late 20s. When I learned it, it was like a light bulb went on for me that like so much about me made sense learning this one thing about my physiology, because I have always seen, and it's part of the reason that I'm the clean person, is that I just see things that other people don't see. Yeah,
right.
I see detail. I bet you have the same thing.
Yeah, totally. And I think you can learn it too.
Probably, yeah.
I once went mushroom hunting and we were looking for black trumpets, and for the first 30 minutes, I simply couldn't see them on the forest floor. They didn't exist to me. I was just like, where are they? I don't see them. Walking around. And something switched in my brain at a certain point, and they like, my brain was able to suddenly detect the pattern of the mushrooms against the forest floor, and they were everywhere.
That's so cool.
They were everywhere. Like, I just hadn't seen them at first, but I was looking at them without seeing them. So it's, I think you can learn to see in a different way.
That's cool.
And it's not the quality of your vision. It's sort of the level of attention you're giving.
Right.
To what you're looking at.
Yeah, it's learning to focus in a new way kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, cleaning definitely has a lot to do with that, and probably a good skill to develop if you are a person who regularly dines out, because you can do the thing that you do where you drive by the kitchen and kind of peek in to see the state of things.
Is the floor disgusting? That, like in the kitchen, if the floor is disgusting,
that's your sign. Yeah, if like, you know, to notice the grain of rice in the fork, tine, to notice. I mean, I think everybody notices the lipstick on the glass.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we can't go through any more of these because we are out of time. This was fun.
Oh, I'll have to tell you about bleeding into food another time.
Yes. Come back in season two and we'll talk about bleeding into the food.
Yeah, there you go.
And I realized I wanted to ask about how often the staff really does spit into food. We'll take that for season two, when I definitely am going to have Daniel Gritzer of Serious Eats back on as my guest.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. I also want to thank my engineer, Liz Smith, and apologize to her for grossing her out with that roach talk. Also, we would like to thank our sponsor, Route 11 Potato Chips. If you like what you heard today, and maybe you did, maybe you didn't, given our topic, please consider subscribing on iTunes, leaving a rating, and telling your pals about this great and kind of gross cleaning show that you love so very, very much. Thank you for listening. I will catch you next week when my guest will be Freddie Hernandez of Jalopnik.com. We'll be talking car messes. Stay tuned for a clip from Chef Marco Kinora sharing some snack hacks on the food scene right here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jolie Kerr. This has been Ask a Clean Person, the podcast. Thanks so much for listening.
There's so much misinformation out there, and everybody thinks that eating well needs to be surrounded with deprivation. And it's like, it's not deprivation at all. Like, I'm a fucking hedonist.
Chef Marco Kinora shares some snack hacks on episode 226 of The Food Scene, hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel.
I love food. I eat food like crazy. I don't need to be hungry to eat food. It is just like a huge part of my life. And, you know, a lot of people are afraid of this idea of eating well because they think that you turn your back on all that stuff. And no, it doesn't mean you turn your back on loving food. It just means you have to educate yourself and think differently about it.
So when you think of popcorn, do you instantly think, oh, that's fiber. That's going to clear me out.
I think about popcorn and then I say, well, let's make sure I put the right fat on it. And let's make sure, you know, I'm getting a good quality popcorn that's not some kind of highly mass-produced GMO popcorn. And then it's great popcorn, and I'll grate some really good pecorino cheese on it and put a boatload of black pepper on it and put a big hunk of really good grass-fed butter on it and some nice sea salt. And, man, it's fucking delicious, decadent popcorn that I could eat a tub of it until I'm sick. And I'm not going to feel so bad about it, right?
Because of you now, cacio e pepeing something is like a verb in our house.
Right.
We always have that hunk of pecorino.
This was an excerpt from episode 226 of The Food Scene, hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel. Did you like it? The Food Scene episodes are available on our website or on iTunes. Dig in for more. This piece was brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.